Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
This is the Honey Badger. Watch it run in slow motion. It's pretty bad. Look, it runs all over the place. Whoa, watch out, says that bird. Ew, it's got a snake. Oh, it's chasing a jackal. Oh my gosh. Oh, the Honey Badgers are just crazy. The honey badger has been referred to by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most fearless animal in all of the animal kingdom. It really doesn't give a shit. If it's hungry, it's hungry. Ew, what's that in its mouth? Oh, it's got a cobra? Oh, it runs backwards? Now watch this. Look, a snake's up in the tree. Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a shit. It just takes what it wants. Whenever it's hungry, it just, ew, and it eats snakes? Oh my god, watch it dig. Look at that digging. The honey badger is really pretty bad. They have no regard for any other animal whatsoever. Look, and it's just grunting and, ew, eating snakes. Ew, what's that, a mouse? Oh, that's nasty. Oh, they're so nasty.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, true currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Jet streams. I'm sorry, I started laughing on Kishka. I'm like, what's that? You eat it? You don't sleep with it? Right.
And I'm still passing out forms here. Here you go, Sarah. This one's yours. Lisa's got her. What did you do to your cell phone anyway? You
know, I have the worst. So I just am abusive. That's
you are abusive to cell phones.
I'm clumsy and I'm forgetful.
And you dropped them. You exercise too much. That's your problem. I keep telling you that. You don't seem to understand.
I think they need to come wrapped in rubber.
They do, don't they? Don't you get those rubber baby buggy bumpers around them?
Well, the BlackBerry's hard to find. I can't never find a thing. So now
that's your problem. Nobody has a BlackBerry anymore.
My fabulous neighbor gave it to me for free. You know, I'm saving the planet. I don't have money for things like phones.
So that's all it takes to save the planet? Is just
friendly neighbors.
Friendly neighbors. Oh, I thought being so poor that you can't afford a real telephone. And they're not even telephones anymore, you know, smartphone. And so she's over on the side here, flipping the battery out there, plugging things in.
We're good.
Are we good? That's an iPad, iPod.
It's really old. It's a flip phone.
It's a flip phone. What's that? I've never heard of such a thing, a flip phone. Denny, have you ever heard anything like that?
No, not at all. Flip phone? Huh?
Eh? Denny's too young. He doesn't remember life without cell phones.
Well, yeah, I'm listening. You know, I listen to all the shows around here, and everybody's frightfully young. And then, you know, I heard Mike Sanders talking about the people with short memories. And it's not just short memories. It's just no sense of history. And it, and I don't even have an example in front of me, except I know it's true.
Well, I think you're staring at one, buddy, right here. I have no good.
You have no sense of history at all. You know what? I'm glad you copped to it. That's awfully kind of you.
Anytime.
It's good to have somebody in the room who will take the blame.
Oh yeah.
We are all products of.
You got to turn that on if you want to speak.
We are all products of public education system.
Now wait a second. Yeah. No. Well, to some degree, I had the nuns for 8 years. Okay, and I learned my grammar.
That is true.
Not so much my math.
Hey, I can up that.
The nuns were big on grammar, but not so much on math. No.
I lived with the nuns for a year. Catholic boarding school all the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Not because I was a bad girl.
Yeah,
which everyone always says, oh, you were that bad? I was not that bad.
That's kind of kinky, actually. All right.
All right, let's get to gardening. Come on.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. Part two of our discussion, the end of the world, and what should you do? And just give up because, let's face it, we're all done here. No, actually, we're not going to do that, because we got amazing response last week to, Blake Davis's, rant, hour long rant here about,
I saw a couple of them.
And they are, they were pretty amazing. And in fact, I just got one on Facebook, and it's going to take a second because you know how slow these... Whoa, it's a little faster than I thought. These computers usually are... You know, the minute you say that, they rebel against you. They rebel against you when you want them to be fast, they'll be slow. And when you want them to be... And you expect them to be slow, then they'll be fast.
Oh, yeah.
But one of our... this is kind of typical. Rick Stabile or Stable or Stabile. I don't know how you pronounce your last name, Rick. You got to send me a pronunciation guide. He's a regular contributor, and he wrote on Facebook, Mike, last week's show with Blake Davis was a bit of a downer. Still, it's good that he doesn't sugarcoat his message. People need to be shocked into action, apparently. I would like to point out, however, that we have reversed the effects of climate change in the past and continue today. From 1934 to 1942, the United States planted 220 million trees in the Great Plains Shelter Belt project, to successfully mitigate the effects of the Dust Bowl. And that's interesting. Yes, I've been meaning to talk about that documentary for a couple of months now, the Dust Bowl, which I saw, the Ken Burns thing, which is, you got to see, is just unbelievable.
What was that one called?
The Dust Bowl.
The Dust Bowl. Okay. I just watched part of it.
I thought everybody in the world knew about that.
I've not seen this one. I've seen National Parks a couple of times. Baseball. I was just watching Prohibition, but I haven't watched Dust Bowl.
No. This is brand new. Ken Burns, you are so out of it.
You know, I barely have TV in my house.
All I got to say to Ken Burns is stop cutting your hair like a beetle and let it go gray. Okay, pal? We know, you know, you've been around a while. It's just like Bob Costas. Bob? The dye job isn't working for you anymore.
Yeah, okay?
It's not.
It's not at all. Not. I mean,
if we are going to mention hair, Denny did have a picture of hair on his Facebook page.
I
think he needs to leave the hair to you. Mike has great hair. Denny, bald is fabulous. You are beautiful bald.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's not trade roles here.
Well, because I realized the only picture I have when we did the It's a Wonderful Life thing was me with a stinking cigarette in my mouth looking like an idiot. So I was like, okay.
I like that shot. You look tough.
I was like, I need some more silly, ridiculous pictures. So there's one with me with the wig. So.
Well, we'll leave Mike to the great hair.
On your Facebook page?
On Facebook, yep.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Watch it.
Do we need to get you some likes on your Weekend for the Cheap?
We had such a heated discussion or a good discussion today on Our Town that we did not have time for the Weekend for the Cheap. But, hey, if you want to like it, check it out.
Okay. Weekend for the Cheap.
Yes. Cheap flight alerts.
Let's get Denny Sheeter some likes on there today, okay?
Chicago to San Francisco, round trip, $250. A little special there.
On a mule?
on a mule, yes.
How do you get $250 round trip? On what?
Check out Weekend for the Cheap on Facebook and you'll find out. You like that?
It's good. Okay. Good, Denny.
There you go.
That's a tease.
So anyway, Rick makes a really good point here on Facebook when he writes about this, that if you look at the documentary, The Dust Bowl, the scariest thing about it is that we caused it. The weather contributed, and we didn't help in terms of having, when the wheat crops were good, we planted more because the situation was right and the conditions were favorable. When the wheat crops were poor, we planted more to make up for them being poor. So no matter what we did, we were going to plow that dirt. We were going to, you know, just rip everything up. We were going to turn it to powder, and we did. And then the rain stopped, and then the winds blew, and then it was unlike anything we had ever seen. And it's a parable for what we're doing to the planet right now, and for what Blake Davis was talking about last week, mm-hmm. and how we need to stop it. But we need somebody with vision. This muddling through and fighting these idiots in Congress who won't even accept the fact that there is a problem at this point, and are more concerned with tanking the economy of the United States by the debt ceiling. Oh, we extended it 3 months. Wow. That's really great, guys. Thanks. The world's going to hell in a handbag, and you agreed to push it down the road for 3 months. This stupid fight, which is really not a fight, and that you should all be given a timeout. You should be all put in the rotunda of the Capitol and in a chair facing the wall and made to read things on the wall and see pictures and plaques of great people before you.
Well, how about remember writing sentences over and over and over when you're in detention? So I will cooperate
like
with
Bart
others.
Simpson.
I will cooperate with others. Yes, I will cooperate with others. It's so frustrating, regardless of topic. You know, I mean, I think for at least what you hear in the media is so far left, so far right. And I think the average American, at least my friends, are really kind of in the middle ground. And I think third graders would probably do a better job of negotiating and coming up with compromise.
I think so, too.
Put third graders in charge.
Because they don't have ideology behind them. So, and again, we keep getting back to this Facebook post from Rick. Stabile. When I figure out how to pronounce his last name. And the Dust Bowl. So we caused it, and then we fixed it. Well, the rains helped again, too. But we set up the conditions by which we could reclaim the land. And we're in a situation now where we have to reclaim the planet somehow. And that's what Blake Davis was talking about. Now, what was interesting about last week. Oh, and by the way, Rick also writes, in 1995, the Chinese began a reforestation project in the Loess Plateau region. And in 2005, Ethiopia started various small-scale but successful reforestation projects in the regions hardest hit by the 1984 drought and famine. And then he sent a video of that. And if you go to the Mike Novak Show on Facebook, you would have to go to not the highlights, but it's one of the things that drives me crazy about Facebook, and a lot of things drive me crazy about Facebook, is you have to go to posts by others. And I think most people don't even bother, you know. So it's either up there or it's not. So maybe I should share it. So what was interesting coming out of that conversation from Blake, we had people who nodded their head and said, yeah, I get it. It's sad. Had some people said, why does all the news have to be bad? About climate change. That was just a particularly dystopian view that Blake Davis brought. But he also got accused of being a one-world government guy. I don't think so, for those of you who thought that. No, I think actually he's a kind of a maverick. And I hate to use that term because it's been thrown around in a very loose way in our political conversation, but I think Blake is sort of on his own there speaking about that. So thank you all for writing in about that and for contributing to that conversation. Now, today, in the second hour, we're going to be talking about the Wild Things Conference, which is coming up. Today is the last day that you can register online. And you have to understand that this is just an amazing conference. It's going to have about 100 sessions. How do you go to these things anymore and see what you want to see? Because there's just too much going on. I'm kind of overwhelmed by all that
stuff. I'm overwhelmed just by the email posts reminding me to attend to the things online, attend to the things, and then retain the information that I'm getting.
Right. So it's on February 2nd at UIC. And it's the fifth biennial Wild Things Conference. It's organized by Audubon Chicago Region in cooperation with Habitat Project, the Volunteer Stewardship Network, and Chicago Wilderness. Funding from the USDA Forest Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, also organizations like the Chicago Park District, the Field Museum, the Forest Preserve District of Cook County, and Openlands are involved. So there's a lot of folks who want to make this happen. 90 talks in all, about roughly, close to 100. The information is on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show if you want to register. It really doesn't cost very much.
And again, there's that student rate, so it's affordable for students.
And the full rate schedule is there if you click on it. On our show today, on the Mike Novak Show, we're going to have Bob Fisher, past president of the Bird Conservation Network. He's going to be highlighting his presentation called Wind Turbines. If you're Ron Coghill, you say turbines. I've been known to say turbine. And he hates that because he thinks it sounds like something that sits on your head.
Right.
Wind turbines. What if I said turbines and just took
then,
a
then, middle? Then no one would be happy.
Nobody would understand me. Wind turbines in Lake Michigan, how they might impact birds. Now, we talked about this bird mortality on the show several months ago, I don't remember exactly when that was. And we had a chart and everything about, and I linked to some of that stuff. The USDA study that we talked about, and it said that wind turbines are very low on the list of things that kill birds. Buildings do the best job, and cats do a pretty good job too. And then, of course, when you say that, the cat people come after you. But it is according to this study, and the study is called into question by people, and even though it's a USDA study. So, but it is a concern. Why? Well, Lake Michigan happens to be a migratory pattern. And it seems that that turbines affect raptors to a large degree. So
I'm really looking forward to this part of the show, because this is something that, since I speak on clean energy so often, I hear both sides of the debate. So I would just really love to have a face-to-face conversation and not just read little tidbits here.
Well, he won't be actually. He'll be on the phone.
He'll be on the phone. Okay.
I wish he'd be in studio, but he's on the phone.
Oh, I thought that Christine Esposito was getting him in here. No, huh?
Nope.
Okay.
You can slap her around when see her.
I'll do that.
But so I'm looking forward to that in the second part of the show in the 10 o'clock hour. To start here, several stories I put up on my website, mikenovak.net. You guys heard of, and folks, by the way, if you hear anything, you're welcome to call 773-763-9278. Let's turn our audience loose, because they've got all this pent up anger from having had to listen to Blake Davis last week.
What was that number again?
773-763-9278. And you're also welcome to contribute on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter handle is Mike Now. Facebook, The Mike Novak Show, and that's MikeNowak. And and the seed keeper gals are looking for a suggestion for a type of small fruit tree. Well, that's off topic, ladies. But then maybe we can get to it.
I think all things are on topic on the Mike Novak Show today.
I think so. Certainly in the first hour, and maybe later on.
I'll find something for them.
And that's the other thing. I know that you've got a lot of Master Gardener things coming up, Sarah. Maybe we should talk. Get your what? You don't
let me get out my calendar.
Get out, she just had a panic face.
I know, her face just went because she because I got one of your emails, and Cope Dog got one, who's also here in the studio. By the way, let me introduce Sarah Batka.
Hi, good morning.
Master Gardener Coordinator for Chicago. and Lisa Albrecht.
Good morning.
Alternative energy expert, and Denny Sheeter, Mr. Phone Screener over there.
I know.
And Cope Dog, who's helping him out.
Morning.
So, whole crew's here. At any rate, you've all seen the story or heard the story about Whole Foods CEO John Mackey, who compared Obamacare to fascism and then just as quickly started walking it back. You're laughing, Denny. You thought that was pretty funny, obviously. The problem is it's not funny. It's, you know, yeah, he runs the company and he's allowed to speak his mind. But I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the idiocy, the whole and it's all code. It's and you know what? When Medicare and Social Security were instituted, they were probably called fascist as well. They were certainly called socialist. But the way we throw words around is just insane. It's not accurate.
Well, right, exactly. They're losing meaning because we start to use them as, I don't know, weapons against one another, you know, to say, you know, a liberal is a...
So, you know,
whatever.
You know, I was going to come on here and say, hey, that guy's an idiot. Don't listen to him. And if you don't like, don't go shop in his store. Then I saw this article in The Guardian. About how, and here it's, the headline is Whole Foods CEO John Mackey calling Obamacare fascist is tip of the iceberg. And the subhead is grocery store founder shocked liberals by calling Obamacare fascist, but he's always been a paradox to the green crowd. And he has said other things in the past. And that have made headlines. And I'm not going to go through the fascist thing because I want to go to some of the other stuff that that he has said. First of all, and in this article in the Guardian says, first of all, John Mackey is an employer. And by all accounts, he's a good one. Whole Foods, I didn't know this, ranks number 32 on Fortune's list of great companies to work for. Why? Because the company caps salaries of executives at 19 times the average full-time salary. Mackey has paid himself a token $1 a year since 2006. In a system picked by its employees, Whole Foods' free health insurance program gives everyone $1,800 a year to spend on health-related costs not provided by its insurance. What doesn't get spent rolls over. Once you start spending, and he said, this is a quote, once you start spending your own money instead of someone else's money, you know to be more careful with it, he said on MSNBC on Friday morning. So that was interesting. I didn't know that. Now he's a businessman. So the Guardian says that, and then they come back with, and he's a businessman. Yeah, he founded Whole Foods, the motto, Whole Foods, Whole People, Whole Planet, in 1980 to sell healthy, organic, unprocessed food. But the company grew to its enormous size because Mackey bought up smaller natural and health food stores around the country. They liken him here to the Barnes & Noble of healthy shopping. So we got one on the plus side. We got one on the minus side. He's a stockholder. Well, he was. 6 years ago, he turned his whole entire Whole Foods stock portfolio over to a charitable foundation. Nonetheless, he's CEO of a publicly traded company and keeps a sharp eye on the share price. But nothing to worry about there. Whole Foods currently trades at $90 a share, up from $50 10 years ago. So the economy hasn't really hurt them. He's a philosopher. That's what he studied at the University of Texas. Although that seems like an oxymoron. and it said he dropped out. But As the Guardian writes here, and I agree, the on-air use of the word fascist was stupid, but it doesn't reflect Mackey's overall thoughtful approach to his business practice and the responsibility he feels in running a large company. They claim he's kind of a hippie, studied Eastern philosophy. He prides himself in never having taken a business class. And on and on and on. Oh, he's very, very rich. Yet genuinely doesn't seem to care about his money. Having sold Whole Foods stock over the years, Mackey is worth millions of dollars, but lives a life of abstinence, flying commercial, backpacking for fun, and driving a Honda. And since 2006, you'll like this, Lisa, Whole Foods has offset 100% of its energy cost with the purchase of wind power credits.
Of wind power, yeah.
You knew that.
You used to be able to, and I don't know if you still can, at the checkout counter, you could actually sign up, and so you would go through a program, and you'd pay a little extra in your, you would actually just pay a monthly fee. I got a little certificate when I signed up for mine, you were helping to offset the electric power so that it would be sourced through the wind.
So there you have it. If you think things are in black and white, they're not always.
Well, and you and I had that conversation a little bit this week in preparation for the show. To, you know, it was easier when things were black and white because, you know, it was just...
When what was good for General Motors was good for the USA?
Yeah, you know, whatever. it was... but now, I guess business isn't... we went through this all last summer, you know, with the whole Chick-fil-A debacle. Know, individuals can have their own opinions, but I guess at the bottom line, if how they're running their company says more.
But look at, okay, yeah,
you know,
sure.
I mean, okay, because
yeah,
we talked about
it doesn't say
Walmart.
More, though, because, you know, he uses his, takes that opportunity. First of all, he took a lot of small businesses out, just took them out, sucked them up, mm-hmm. absorbed them,
yep.
so that he could do this. And you know the rap on his business. A lot of people call it a whole paycheck because it's not exactly cheap. It does, when you have these large centers, you're taking away from the neighborhood grocer, as if that exists anymore. And they do actually in Chicago in places. I go down to the corner to get produce. There's a couple of places within walking distance of me that I can go west, I can go east, and walk and get produce. And they ain't Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. They're neighborhood. Well, one's a neighborhood and one's another chain, Tony's,
right.
which always has excellent produce. And reasonably priced, very reasonably, and organic produce if you want it. I won't eat a potato that's not organic anymore. You know, if you ever learn about what's put on potatoes, you will never, ever eat a so-called traditionally farmed potato ever again. Read Michael Pollan's book, The Botany of Desire.
Okay.
Which it looks at four plants. Have you read this, Sarah, Botany of Desire?
I haven't.
Okay. Just one of the great, he's written some great books.
I'm putting it on my list.
He puts four plants, he talks about four plants. Tulips, potatoes, apples, and marahuchi. Marahuchi. And talks about how, marijuana, and talks about how those plants, you know, how we've cultivated those plants and how they've cultivated us. They have properties that we want. So in a way, you could say what has happened in evolution is that we have been trained to like those plants, and that ensures their survival as plants. Now, they've been altered in the course of history. I mean, I mentioned this on Mighty House yesterday when I was talking to Ron Cowgill about apple seeds. For people who know about apples, if you take an apple seed from, you know, a Honeycrisp, and you want a Honeycrisp tree, and you plant that seed in your yard, you're not going to get a Honeycrisp. You're going to get something else because they don't come true to seed. The progeny of apples will not come true to seed. So if you want a Honeycrisp, you have to graft that tree. So people say, well, what about Johnny Appleseed? Johnny Appleseed! Spreading seed, apple seeds throughout the... And Johnny Appleseed is a true story. You know what else you can do with apples? You can make apple mash. Yee-hoo!
And that's what he was spreading. He was spreading the gospel of apple mash throughout the middle of the country. So Pollen, Michael Pollen, also looks at potatoes and how they are farmed now with the pesticides we put on and within an inch of their lives to keep the diseases off. And you read that and you think, I don't want to ingest that. Strawberries are pretty bad, too, in general. So I've gone to organic potatoes. I will be the first to admit I don't buy organic everything. But you know, I've investigated this and I look at the ones that seem to make the most sense. And organic potatoes seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, I'm with you. I can't afford to buy everything organic that I'd like to buy organic. So, you know, in understanding anything that I'm eating the skin, anything that is, you know, like in the ground that's completely absorbing everything that's in the ground, like a potato, a carrot, a turnip.
I mean, even if you're growing food in an urban area and you have lead, you might suspect you have lead in the soil. The real, you have to be careful about root crops. Mm-hmm. But really, the point of that is don't get the soil on your root crops. Make sure you wash off the soil. Or peel the skin from a root crop. And at that point, you're really doing yourself a huge favor. So anyway, black and white sometimes doesn't work in the real world. And John Mackey is one of those people that you have to look at and go, okay, he's an idiot for saying what he did. I don't shop at Whole Foods, and I'm not likely to now. And there's a lot of places, you know, some of these other idiot places, CEOs like Olive Garden and what was it, Papa John's and Red Lobster, who are all whining about how now I have to make sure that my employees have health care. That really stinks. Yeah, well, you're not going to see my business anymore. And you know, and I got to tell you, last week I was watching football and I was actually kind of rooting for Denver. And then when they lost, I thought, well, why was I rooting for Denver? He's got Peyton Manning, who's been doing commercials for Papa John's, and he's rich, and I don't care. You know, I'd like some of the people of Denver to be happy, but somebody's got to lose. And I realized, oh, no. Good on them. Glad they lost. Glad they lost. All right, I'm on my soapbox here. All right. The other second story that I saw was even more disturbing. And if you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. The other story is about quinoa. Everybody, we've talked about quinoa. Anybody in the room eat quinoa?
Rarely.
Me either.
Really? Okay.
I always think that I will, but I bought some. I haven't cooked it.
It's a grain that's not a grain.
I'd eat it if somebody else cooked it.
Yes. At a picnic.
Well, this is just at a picnic. Just to be nice, right? Just to say, and then say, go, that was good. Thanks for fixing that. Yeah.
I know Inspiration Kitchens does a really popular quinoa burger.
Kathleen does several great quinoa dishes. Basically with quinoa, you just throw anything in it. She likes throwing in different vegetables and, you know, you season it a little bit and it's pretty good stuff. This is also from The Guardian. There's a couple of stories here, one from Time Magazine, one from The Guardian, and also from Daily Kos that I where I found out about this. From The Guardian, not long ago, quinoa was just an obscure Peruvian grain you could only buy in Whole Food shops. We struggled to pronounce it, yet it was feted by food lovers as a novel addition to the familiar ranks of couscous and rice. Dietitians clucked over quinoa approvingly because it ticked the low-fat box and fitted in with government healthy eating advice to, quote, base your meals on starchy foods. Really? Is that what they tell us? Sales took off. Quinoa was, in marketing speak, the miracle grain of the Andes, although it's not exactly a grain. Healthy, right-on, ethical addition to the meat avoiders larder. Consequently, the price shot up. It has tripled since 2006. And guess what that's resulted in? Poorer people in Peru and Bolivia, for whom it was once a nourishing staple food, can no longer afford to eat it. Where it comes from. Imported junk food is cheaper than quinoa now in those countries. Yes. In Lima, quinoa now costs more than chicken. Outside the cities and fueled by overseas demand, the pressure is on to turn land that once produced a portfolio of diverse crops into quinoa monoculture. This is why we can't have nice things, because we just don't know when to quit.
Why does the beginning of the show and discussions of Dust Bowls come to mind? Did we discuss this already today?
No, this is different. See, it's related, but it's different. Yeah. And
do we have to learn the same lesson for every crop, or can we just learn it for?
Well, I just learned. I'm going to have a good one for you in just a second. So I'm going to end up as Hal Sparks does with a happy ending in my trio of stories. It says, quinoa trade, and again from The Guardian, is another troubling example of damaging North-South exchange, with well-intentioned health and ethics-led consumers here unwittingly driving poverty there. It's beginning to look like a cautionary tale of how a focus on exporting premium foods can damage the producer country's food security. Feeding our apparently insatiable, I'm still reading from the article here, 365-day-a-year hunger for this luxury vegetable, Peru has also cornered the world market in asparagus. I adore asparagus. Result? The arid Ica region, where Peruvian asparagus production is concentrated, in that region, this thirsty export vegetable has depleted the water resources on which local people depend. NGOs report that asparagus laborers toil in substandard conditions and cannot afford to feed their children, while fat cat exporters in foreign supermarkets cream off the profits.
Shop local.
Grow local.
Grow local.
Put an asparagus patch in your backyard. I think I'm going to have to do it to...
My grandma had one when I was little. I remember getting in trouble because it was at the bottom of a hill and I would roll down into the asparagus.
Oh.
I think I was three.
I would have disowned you for that.
I was three. I do remember it.
I would have disowned you for it anyway.
That's
three,
a great
you're
memory. That's so cool.
Rolling in the asparagus patch. Roll.
There was laughing, but there was also scolding.
All right. So that's two. Here's the third one, though, the third story, and I think we're going to have to get to Rick DeMaio here. And see, now the computer, I'm trying to go fast, and it's it won't do. See, this is when I want to move fast. I want to thank Rick Stabile again for this one, because he sent this to me several weeks ago. It's a commentary in the New York Times by Mark Bittman, who does opinions for them. And it's about the way we grow food. It's about a study that was done. And the study showed some very interesting things when they compared the way we farm conventionally, what we call conventionally. It was an Iowa State University study on the Marsden farm. And on 22 acres of it, beginning in 2003, researchers set up three plots. One replicated the typical Midwestern cycle of planting corn one year, then soybeans the next, along with the stew of chemicals that they throw on that stuff. On another, they planted a three-year cycle that included oats. The third plot added a four-year cycle and alfalfa. So, and the three-year, they were doing a three-year rotation, corn, oats, soybean. And the result, and the other one was a 4-year cycle. It says the longer rotations also integrated the raising of livestock whose manure was used as fertilizer. The results were stunning, according to Mark Bittman. The longer rotations produced better yields of both corn and soy, reduced the need for nitrogen fertilizer and herbicides by up to 88%, reduced the amount of toxins in the groundwater 200-fold, and the best part, did not reduce profits by a single cent. In short, as he writes, there was only upside and no downside at all associated with the longer rotations. There was an increase in labor costs, but remember that profits were stable, so they balanced each other out, basically. He writes, no one expects Iowa corn and soybean farmers to turn this thing around tomorrow, but one might at least hope that the USDA would trumpet the outcome. The agency declined to comment when he asked about it. And as he writes, a conspiracy theorist might note that the journal Science and Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences both turned down the study. And it was finally published in PLOS-1. I don't even know what that stands for. I can get to it in a second. And he read about it in the Union of Concerned Scientists website. So that's the good news. If we get smart about farming instead of throwing money and chemicals at our crops, maybe we can reclaim some of this land. And it does sort of go back to the Dust Bowl and what we were doing there. And, you know, more nutrients, more organisms in the soil, better crops. So there you go. There's the three that I thought folks should know about. And Rick DeMille. It's coming up in just a second. Here's some facts from the care of trees. Want to know why you should grow trees? Well, trees renew our air supply by absorbing carbon dioxide and producing oxygen. The amount of oxygen produced by an acre of trees per year equals the amount consumed by 18 people annually. One tree produces nearly 260 pounds of oxygen each year. 1 acre of trees removes up to 2.6 tons of carbon dioxide each year. Shade trees can make buildings up to 20 degrees cooler in the summer. Trees lower air temperature by evaporating water in their leaves. Tree roots stabilize soil and prevent erosion. Trees improve water quality by slowing and filtering rainwater, as well as protecting aquifers and watersheds. The cottonwood tree seed is the seed that stays in flight the longest. We're talking facts here. This tiny seed is surrounded by ultralight white fluff hairs that can carry it on the air for days. And if you've ever been in May and it seems to be snowing, that's a cottonwood tree. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, also streaming live at, you can find out on the Mike Novak Show. Also go to chicagosprogressivetalk.com. I have to laugh because Annie Haven has posted her usual, and I appreciate it, Annie. Always a shout out to you. Are you tuned into the Mike Novak radio show? Always fun and informative. And then, of course, right above that or past that, climate change denial, dust bowls and quinoa made unaffordable to indigenous peoples. Mike Novak is starting to sound like my Twitter feed. So sometimes it's fun and sometimes it's not so fun. Let's bring in a fun guy. That's Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. How you doing, Rick?
Good. What was the reference to Bob Dylan's Everyone Must Get Stoned?
I don't know. It just came up. I have no idea, Rick. I just...
I don't remember the last time I got stoned.
Wait a second. Oh, I wish I had a rim shot for that one. Okay.
So, Mike, let me ask you something. We're roughly the same age. You got a few more years on me, I think, than I do. But do you remember the first presidential inauguration you actually watched on TV?
No, because when no,
let me put it this way: do you remember the first presidential inauguration, whether it was on TV or print or radio?
Wow, oh, you're going after me today, huh?
I'm just a question. I mean, today.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying. You know, it's like
mine would be
remember
Jimmy
George,
Carter.
Jimmy Carter.
I remember Jimmy Carter.
Okay. Actually, I remember when Nixon was inaugurated the second time, and I think part of the reason I do because is my my parents brought me over to the public school to vote. And you know, I think we all remember that when you go into your public school, you know, in fifth or sixth grade, you go in there at night and it looks so different, you know, like the lights are off and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad and my mom bringing me over to vote. And you know, it went into that weird looking, you know, metal. It looked like an upright casket or something, and it had the big leather, you know, curtain that you pulled off to the side. And she goes, "We're going to vote for President of the United States. Which one do you like?" And I go, "I like the guy who has the same name as me." And I didn't realize I was voting for a schnook at that point.
Yeah, but what you didn't realize either is that's how most of the American people vote. That's kind of their criteria.
I know it was actually kind of cool. So I remember the whole thing where you put the thing in there and then you kind of do this whole like when you crank one way and then crank the other way. But it was and then clearly I remember Carter because I'll remember this well because my dad said he liked Jimmy Carter because they actually would vote Republican. They voted for Jimmy Carter because he reminded them of another John F. Kennedy. Isn't that amazing? And here it was 1976, and not realizing that, you know, 1963 was only 13 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like the year 2000 was only 13 years ago. And for you and Lisa and myself, 2000 seemed like last week. So
I can,
for my parents, 1963 didn't seem that long ago, but now it seems like a whole generation.
Yeah, and I remember Jimmy Carter running for office and all the excitement around him. And you got to remember that we had just been through years and years of Watergate, and
the end of the Vietnam War was terrible. We needed something fresh. Yeah, that was kind of like what Kennedy gave us as well. Yeah,
and as it was, Gerald Ford barely lost the election. It was very close.
And he almost actually lost in the Republican primary to Ronald Reagan, if you remember.
Yeah.
Reagan actually, they almost had a split convention at the time back in 76, and obviously, you know, look what happened in 1980.
But if you think that this talk of what we're going through now with the debt ceiling and all that is relentless, you don't know relentless until you live through the Watergate era, from, you know, starting from when the first revelations came out.
Yeah.
A full 2 years, two and a half years, there was nothing else going on.
Yeah, I remember that well. In fact, I even remember coming home every day, and, you know, my parents were TV nuts because my dad worked for H.C. Nielsen at the time, and his office in Manhattan was in between the NBC and the ABC building. And I remember every night with the person leading the news, and there was a map of, you know, the South China Sea, and you can see the Vietnam Peninsula there. And I always kept saying, why do we keep doing this? Why do we keep doing this? And then actually wearing one of those you know, little bracelets around your wrist, which was, you know, designated for, you know, a POW or an MIA. And that's mainly because I grew up with older people in the house. And then going through the Watergate thing, it was true. I mean, Carter was bringing a breath of fresh air into the White House. So it was, I guess, the way a lot of people felt in the, you know, early 60s when Kennedy ran. So it's kind of interesting to kind of put that all in perspective.
Absolutely. Something else that I want to put in perspective is, the idea of walking out the back door today and having it that crisp. I like it. I got to tell you, I enjoy it.
Yeah, notice you said crisp, but not brutally Arctic cold, because as cold as it got, I mean, it's still only 14 degrees, and, you know, looking at temperatures in northern Wisconsin, it's -2 up in Ashland. It's, I mean, it's 14 or 15 below in northern Minnesota. But there's actually another cold shot coming, and that's going to arrive late tomorrow night and into Tuesday. So it still looks like tomorrow maybe temperatures in the teens to lower teens, and I think probably Tuesday morning is going to be the coldest day of the winter so far. But, you know, we're saying coldest day of the winter so far, and you're already looking at, you know, we're the last third or the third week of January, and you're looking at this, and, you know, something's wrong. And even when, you know, President Obama takes the oath of office for the second time, you know, the temperature in Washington, D.C. is going to be close to 55 degrees, and it was 55 yesterday. So, you know, it's interesting. A lot of mild air across much of the country yesterday. St. Louis got up to 65, but still a lot of cold air, though, a lot of cold air across parts of Canada. They've been brutally cold up in northwestern Canada, parts of Alaska, and still central areas of Inner Mongolia, China, Russia, even parts of Eastern Europe have been cold. And again, this seems to be the pattern, Mike, where we get these pockets of really cold weather and, you know, pockets of, you know, really mild weather. And, you know, I think that's just the way this winter has been going. And on top of that, one of the reasons why the lack of cold is the lack of snow. You look outside and you go, this doesn't look like the third week of January. If you had snow right now, we'd easily be below zero today, and that's obviously not the case.
You know, our buddy Pat Skatch sent us an email yesterday, and he said, I can't agree with the model runs for Tuesday morning's low temperatures below zero. Do you agree with Pat's?
It does. Because typically what happens this time of year is that the model runs actually, and when we say model runs, we're not thinking of Victoria's Secret people running down, you know, Lake Shore Drive or anything like that. We're talking about numerical models actually trying to represent the atmosphere. And typically what they do, they have equations based on the fact that this time of the year, climatologically, you have snow on the ground. And that snow does two things. It keeps the ground, the warmth of the ground, warming the atmosphere up to about, say, 2 meters. And it takes the sunlight, and because snow is white, highly reflective surface, it reflects the sunlight back into the atmosphere. So snow can have a tremendous impact on either keeping you from getting warm or allowing you to stay cold. And with none of those factors, or at least upstream factors, which is really the key here, you got to look at where that cold air is coming from. You could probably oftentimes take maybe about 2 or 3 degrees off, you know, what the numerical models are running. And sometimes if the snowpack is very deep, you may actually add a few degrees on to that, you know, predicted model run. And that's really where the fun part comes in, as being a meteorologist, is you're trying to outguess computers. And then there's some people say, oh, just let it get close to it, it's fine. But it actually, you know, it's fun when you begin to know that the trends of certain things. And I certainly agree with Pat that it's going to be really tough to get below zero. Here in the Chicagoland area, maybe a little bit further north, you may be able to get to that. And, you know, we typically see 11 days below zero each winter. The coldest we got last year was 5 above. The coldest so far this year 10 above. And even though we're cold right now, we'll have an afternoon high of maybe 15. Because we were actually at 28 degrees at 1 a.m. last night, that 28-degree temperature is actually going to go down in the books as the high temperature so far for the date. So even though we have a couple of cold days coming through, it's not a real, you know, unbearable cold. It's something that we'll be able to get through with no problem.
And it's something that's, it doesn't, is this going to last? I assume it's not going to last very long.
No, it's actually, we'll warm right back up to close to the mid-30s Thursday, and then there's a little shot of low pressure coming across the Midwest, which could give us our first significant snow on Friday. And then there's some indications that we could get back into, you know, some moderate cold as we go into the next couple of weeks. So say goodbye to, you know, near 50 degrees, which actually the lakefront hit yesterday. I don't think we'll see that for probably a good solid 2 or 3 weeks. But you know what? This is the coldest time of the year. It's this week, you know, last week and this week we're at our coldest. And by the time we get to the end of next week, we begin to actually begin to warm up a little bit each day.
No.
We're already on that.
No.
We're already on the other end of the bell curve.
No.
It's nuts. I know. Usually by the end, by, you know, the third week of January, you're like, well, what's going on? But I still got to think, Mike, that with the way the jet stream has been, it's been very active. It just hasn't been active for us. So I still think there's a couple of real big snowstorms in our future over the next month to month and a half. It just hasn't been our winter. And, you know, that's how winters go sometimes. Every once in a while, It's not meteorology. It's basically luck at that point.
Yeah, and because we haven't had how many days are we at now without significant snowfall?
Well, I mean, we've already broken the record. The record was January 17th for the latest 1 inch, and I don't think we're going to see anything until probably next Friday. So when you break a record by 1 or 2 days, that's usually what you do. But this record, we're going to break almost by 10 days.
Oh my goodness.
Which is phenomenal. We haven't had an inch of snow since back crazy. I got a feeling the next time we have an inch of snow, there'll probably be more salt on the ground than there is snow because the guys are wanting to get rid of that salt that they have stockpiled.
They're going to need it. And I feel sorry for the people who have snow plowing services. A lot of...
They're really hurting, particularly the ones that kind of work, you know, per event. There's obviously ones that are contracted out, but the per event one, they're hurting for sure. But you know what? We're saving money by not using the fuel. So, you know, it works either way.
Good stuff. All right. Rick DeMille Weather, thanks. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
And happy birthday, Mike.
Aw, you let that cat out of the bag.
What?
But we'll talk to you later. Gotta go.
Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
She sat right down on the sofa, said, where have you been? I've been waiting for you. Cause last night I had some soul.
Oh, I love it when I hit the post.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Radio Land, that's called hitting the post, buddy.
And I got my buddy Tom N is listening this morning because I saw some tweets, and he's a radio dude, and he's a cat person, too. So,
and he also wished you a happy birthday on Twitter.
Okay.
When is it?
They're coming in. It's tomorrow.
I know, it's
right
early. It's too early.
I had no idea.
I know. That's the way it's supposed to be.
No.
Tomorrow.
Big things need big celebrations.
All right. So what I'm going to post on, and I was going to do this tonight, but I might as well do it right now. This article that I had, I wonder if I still have it up on the computer because I never close windows on my computer. And here it is. Yeah, it's open. The most depressing day of the year. Blue Monday. And this article says there really is a most depressing day of the year. It is known as Blue Monday. And for 2013, that day should be January 21st.
Your birthday.
Thank you very much.
Your birthday. No.
The most depressing day of the year is commonly termed Blue Monday, and it is a phenomenon which occurs once a year, each and every year, without fail. There is one date every year that is calculated to be the most depressing day that will occur for that year. And Blue Monday is it. In 2012, that day was January 23rd. And the next Blue Monday on the horizon is January 21st, 2013. Thank you very much.
Huh?
So relax and get prepared so you won't be too shocked when you feel a little down on that date.
Man.
So, and this is not the only time. This 21st goes through the rotation. There's only like three or four days that end up being Blue Monday, I think, because there was in 28, I believe the 21st was also the most depressing day of the year.
I'm going to disagree, Mike. It's a holiday for me, so I am thrilled and looking forward to.
Well, that's true. For some people, it's a holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. For Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the original date of Blue Monday was mathematically calculated in 2005 by Dr. Cliff Arnall, a researcher at Cardiff University. Cardiff. Isn't that where Snoop Dogg was talking about his friend
I think so.
Growing the vegetable in Cardiff?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You know, you got to find it.
You know, I do. See, now I'm just going to waste time.
That doctor, he should stop bumming everybody out and get some good studies, study some good stuff.
Find Snoop Dogg. I got to get Snoop Dogg talking about his rutabagas. Now, I have to know whether it's under rutabaga or is under, is it S for rutabaga? It's under rutabaga. See, it's not even under S for a Snoop Dogg.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secret so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neal from Cardiff, come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got two tickets for you when I get to town. You dig?
I'm so impressed how quickly you pulled that.
Yeah. He's waiting for Green Wednesday.
Oh, boy. So anyway, back to Cardiff. It fell in 2005. It was the January 24th, which was the fourth Monday of January. Mr. Arnall created his formula for the most depressing day of the year by working on six distinct factors: weather conditions, gloomy old January and its typical lack of sunshine, debt level, and our ability to pay that debt. We're talking about individual debt level, you know, right after the holidays. Time elapsed since Christmas, time elapsed since failing our New Year's resolutions, our general seasonal motivational levels, and our need to take action and to have something to look forward to during January, and depending on where you reside, after Martin Luther King Day, there's no holidays. Until real not a real holiday until Memorial Day, on the at the end of May. I mean Valentine's Day. That's just made up to sell cards.
And yeah. It's actually, well, and it's no day off.
But you gotta like Valentine's Day for one reason. It keeps some of our florists in business. It's a horticultural holiday.
That's good,
and that helps. So there you have it. My birthday this year is on the most depressing day of the year.
Well, my birthday is Memorial Day, so that takes us to the end of the stretch.
Is that the, when's yours, the 30th?
26th.
Oh, because see, my dad's birthday was on the 30th, which for many, many years was the official holiday.
Was the official day, yeah.
And that was and he always used to say, I'm going to take my birthday off from work. Well, of course, he always got it off from work, but, you know, there you go. You dig.
So we have a full packed back of the staff hour.
We do. We have special guests. To start, let's get Bob on the phone and Denny will take care of that. And then at 10:30, we are going to have Steve Bianucci and David Miller from Iroquois Valley Farms. We were talking earlier about sustainable agriculture, and Iroquois Valley Farms LLC has its purpose to operate a for-profit, a farmland company that positively impacts local sustainable and organic agriculture, focusing on the mid-size family farmer. And they will be here at 10:30. So, like you said, lots going on during this half hour. So let's go right to the phones. Thank you, Denny. And bring in Bob Fisher. Bob, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Mike. How about you?
I'm great. We're gearing up, and let's remind people again that this is the last day to register online for the Wild Things Conference on February 2nd at UIC.
That's correct.
And Bob is the past president of the Bird Conservation Network, and one of the presenters of a talk called Wind Turbines in Lake Michigan, How They Might Impact Our Birds. Now, do you pronounce it turbine or turban?
Well, either way, depending, I guess, on who I'm talking to. I think it's turban, but
I do too. That's what we're going to go with. So I'm going to I'm going to fly in the face of what Ron Kyle Gill thinks on Mighty House here in Chicago's Progressive Talk and say turban, because that's the way I've always pronounced it. You were also and the reason you're one of the reasons you're qualified to speak to this. You've been not only a past president of the Bird Conservation Network, but you were on the Lake Michigan Offshore Wind Energy Advisory Council.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, that council was formed a couple of years ago as a result of some legislation put forward by Robin Gable, Representative Gable, and eventually signed by the governor. And the council was created essentially to provide guidance, if you will, to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources on developing policies for when, if lake bed leases might be granted to erect turbines in Lake Michigan.
And you guys were, yeah, that had its mandate in 2011, and then it was to provide a report of its findings to the General Assembly, which it did.
Exactly.
Last year.
Right, mid-year last year. And for those interested, you can Google that acronym, if you can remember that acronym, and find the report fairly easily.
Bob, I'm way ahead of you. I've got the link on my website.
All right.
You just go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, and if you scroll down about two-thirds of the way, you'll see a sentence that says, the full report can be found here, and you can link on that. And one of the things that you guys addressed in this, now there were a lot of issues. There are a number of issues. It's not just birds and bats in putting wind power in Lake Michigan. And among the things that you were tasked with finding out, appropriate criteria for the department to use, review applications for offshore wind development, criteria for identifying areas that are favorable, acceptable, and unacceptable for offshore wind development, including protecting wildlife, protected habitats, navigation, commercial fisheries, and recreational uses of Lake Michigan, and on and on and on. So you had to look at all of these. But yours, what you're speaking on in particular is the effect of birds. And this is something I've talked about on the show before, because I get emails from another bird organization, the American Bird Conservancy, ABC.
Sure.
They're pretty rabidly going after wind turbines. And I'm not exactly sure why, because if you look at the numbers, the birds killed by wind turbines are minuscule compared to buildings and even cats and predators, other predators. Does the organization that you were with, the Bird Conservation Network, take the same stand?
No, you know, the issue with turbines is largely not not an issue of collisions with birds. There are some exceptions to that, but in general, that's not the major issue. The principal issue, and that goes right to the heart of turbines out in the lake, the principal issue is, I guess, what I'll call avoidance. And that's the idea that if you build a turbine or a turbine farm, that the birds that might otherwise use that area won't. And that can have some consequences for them. Specifically in the lake, Mike, the shoal waters where you can build the turbines are, you know, there's a, at least currently there's a depth limit in terms of anchoring them to the bottom, is about 30 meters or let's say nominally 100 feet. And some of those same shoals where you could do that are used by particularly in this case by wintering water birds, diving ducks, loons, and grebes, and so forth. And the fact is that a couple of things are not really known. One thing that's not known is how many and what species are using the lake. And in this case, we're obviously talking about the south end of Lake Michigan. There is some anecdotal information, but it's not, nobody knows in detail what's there. That is being rectified. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife found some money and passed it along to the Great Lakes Commission to administer, essentially to do surveys of the lake. Not, by the way, not just Lake Michigan, but the other Great Lakes as well, to determine, you know, where are the water birds, what are they doing, how many are there, and so forth. And part of my talk at Wild Things will be to talk a little bit about what you might say early returns on that research. And so I think the question is not so much are turbines good or bad for birds? The question is what locations might be better or worse for birds, again, particularly the water birds that use the lake, again, particularly in the fall and the winter. So it's not a simple, we hate turbines. Not at all. No.
Well, let's get back to that. You say that turbines don't the collisions are not a particular issue with turbines and birds. Is that is that just here? Because I know that some of the questions are I've done some reading on this over the last couple of years, and the questions seem to be, first of all, placement. And, you know, if you're putting them in southern Lake Michigan, this is a migratory pattern.
Exactly.
Or the highway, if you will. This is where a lot of birds travel, I suspect, because of prevailing winds and so forth and the lake and whatever. But also, often turbines are put in canyons, and the complaint is that that's where raptors tend to travel through, and that's why there have been mortality rates associated with turbines in canyons.
Exactly. And, you know, there's sort of several answers to that thesis. The famous Altamont Pass out in California was a case where turbines were built, and at the time nobody realized how much those same areas were being used by large raptors, and collisions was definitely an issue there. And as you probably know, they've changed their practices a bit to try and minimize that. I don't know that they've eliminated that. But when you talk about turbines in the lake, if you're talking about migratory songbirds, thrushes and so forth, that's definitely an issue at times, particularly when there's appropriate or inappropriate weather conditions. If you get a sudden fog or lowering cloud early in the morning when these birds are moving from the lake on shore, you risk having collisions being a problem. But there's a relatively simple fix to that, and that is if you know that weather event's going to happen, you can turn the turbines off. And so the collisions become less of an issue. Obviously, I'm simplifying that, but...
I was reading how studies were done where, and I forget, Spain. I guess it was in Spain where there was a wind farm, and there were spotters. out there, seeing when birds were arriving, and then they would actually turn off some of the turbines and then turn them back on, and they had 7/100ths of a power drain or less power generated because of that, and yet the mortality rate was decreased by 50%.
Right.
So that seems like a great trade-off.
Yeah, clearly the folks who design and build turbines and the companies that operate them have steadily come to the realization that there are some operational things, there are some design things that they can minimize the collisions as an issue. And if those things are done, it becomes less of an issue and less of a problem. But again, the other issue, and clearly, Mike, it's not known. I mean, most of the studies of turbines and their effects on water birds have been done in Europe. And the one thing that some of those studies have shown is that the water birds, the ducks, and so forth, avoid the farms. They don't use those areas. So the question here in our end of the lake, you might say, is pretty simple. If there are a lot of ducks, a lot of waterfowl, a lot of loons and grebes using these areas in the winter to feed, and they get pushed off of those areas by wind turbine farms, where do they go? Do they have alternate areas they can feed, and will that affect their fitness? You know, it's a whole bunch of questions. But the first thing you always have to do is you have to find out what's there and how much and how, and that's what these studies that are happening as we speak. That's what will hopefully answer some of those questions.
That's Bob Fisher, who's the past president of the Bird Conservation Network. What are you doing presently?
Well, presently I'm still active in BCN. I'm actually currently president of the Illinois Ornithological Society, which is another fairly impressive title I'm a volunteer president, shall we say.
Well, I know all about being a volunteer president of an organization.
Yeah.
He's speaking at the Wild Things Conference.
I am, as are 100 other people. There's, it's February 2nd. It's registration is still open. I've attended every one. There have been five. And if you want to go someplace and feel good about what's going on, citizen science, and how here in the Chicago area, how we're, I think, very actively approaching and solving and taking wonderful steps forward on sort of striking a balance between environmental issues and the quality of life issues and so forth that we have here in Chicago. So Wild Things is a great, great event. There are 100 talks scheduled. There's a number of them on gardening. You can learn about amphibians. You can learn about a whole host of things. It's, I think the registration, Mike, is, I think it's $40 and $25 bucks for students. But, I mean, you get a day's worth of just feeling good about what's going on, and you learn a lot. Every time I go, I learn something. So are you going to go? Are you hoping to?
I'm hoping to go, and I think that a couple of people in the room are thinking about that as well.
I'll absolutely be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just perusing the schedule. It looks like some really great events on so many topics.
Fantastic.
It's just the place to be. If you care about the environment and you want to know what other people think, and, you know, there's always a danger to get in a group of like-minded people because we all tend to reinforce our own preconceptions. But on the other hand, it's a great feeling in this case.
Well, but you're also providing a lot of information. I've had Sarah kind of looking at some of the different talks that are going to be there. What stands out when you're looking at it, Sarah?
I'm really interested in checking out the creating native eco gardens in your community. It looks like I'm kind of drawn to the sea track.
Mm-hmm.
What's the sea track? and you got to remember that this is all in one day.
I know.
They got the A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. It goes through the M track. or which is any of the above.
So it's the backyards, neighborhoods, and urban environment, but there's also a bird conservation track, an ecological land management and restoration track, volunteer and community building, an outreach track. I mean, I need to duplicate myself so I could be in two places at the same time.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, is you want to go to about six of the talks and you just can't. But if you pick and choose, you can come up with a pretty impressive cross section. And you know, it's not just volunteers; it's a lot of our local professionals, folks who work at the Cook County Forest Preserve District, DuPage Lake. It's a lot of people who know a lot about what they're talking about, and you can just learn a tremendous amount by going there.
And like you said, it's only $40, and you have to, if you want to register online, you got to do it by the end of today.
Exactly.
If you're a student, it's only $25.
Yep. You can walk up even on the day of the event, but you know, as always with any event like this, the organizers need to know, have a rough idea how many people are coming. So I would hope people would, you just Google Wild Things 2013, and that'll take you right to the conference's homepage, and it's very easy to register right online. So
Of course, I will say that it's also on my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got all
thank
the
you for that.
And your Facebook page.
And my Facebook page now, thanks to Lisa Albrecht. Now that we've told people how much is going on, I have just a couple more questions. I want to get back to you on get this subject about the wind turbines in Lake Michigan. First of all, it amazes me. You're saying, well, we need to do these studies about whether you mean we haven't done them yet. Why don't we know about those patterns already?
I think because partially because there was a lot of anecdotal information, but not any sort of serious taking a look at what's actually going on out in the lakes. And that may have been strictly because most of the agencies that are involved in resource management and so forth weren't concerned with what's happening 6 or 7 miles out in the lake. So I guess these two things have come together. A lot of people have identified the fact that we really don't know what's out there. So Fish and Wildlife and other groups, the wind turbine folks themselves, have stepped forward and said, well, let's find out. So I think it's just a juxtaposition, you might say, of the need and the ability. You know, most of it's aerial survey stuff, and the advent of these GIS systems allows them to take the aerial survey data that they do and overlay that so that they can identify underwater features that correspond with the concentrations of ducks and geese, not so much geese, but ducks and other water birds. And also a lot of these tracking studies that are being done where they're putting transmitters on waterfowl, on loons, and so forth, is allowing people to develop those overlays on the maps so that you can see where these birds are going, how long they stay in a particular location, when do they move, and so on and so forth. There's a really great graphic on, I think it's called loon migration. I suppose if you Google that, you'll probably find it. I believe it's a Fish and Wildlife website. And there's a great graphic showing of how a bunch of loons that they put transmitters on up in northwestern Wisconsin, exactly how they travel, how they move, how fast they move, so how long they're in the lake and so forth. Most of the loons that migrate through here end up in the Gulf. But they do use the lake on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are a lot of ducks, particularly the diving ducks. The sort of the poster child for that is a duck species called the long-tailed duck. Spend the winter. That's where they forage. Their bottom feeders, their diving ducks. They eat invertebrates. Some of them eat bottom vegetation and so forth. And for years, people have known that, but there's never been really a systematic scientific study to say, well, how many and how long and where. So the wind turbine possibilities created the need for that data, and that need, I think, now is being filled.
I'm looking right now. I went to loon study, loon migration, and are you talking about that chart where the little dots move across the screen,
yep.
And then they all go out of like upper Wisconsin and
right.
And Minnesota, and then they move to the Great Lakes. They almost all end up in Lake Michigan, and then they move south from there.
Well, and if you put that in perspective, Mike, this is a small number of loons that they actually tagged. There are a lot more loons going up into Western Ontario and so forth. And those aren't tagged, but these tag loons are telling you that that's where these birds are going. So, you know, there's just a few dots, but there are an awful lot of them that aren't.
It's really cool.
Transmitters that are doing exactly the same thing.
Did you find the same thing, Lisa, that put that up on the Facebook? Done and done, right?
Done and done.
Yeah. There's another graphic there which shows the travel lines. I don't remember. I believe it's the 2010-2011 study, and it shows the travel lines, and that's also a very useful graphic. In fact, I intend to use that one in my talk in a couple of weeks.
I've clicked on that. It's very cool. This is terrific stuff. So we've got that posted on our Facebook page for folks who are interested in loons.
Yeah.
Can you do a loon call for us there, Bob?
No, I'm not one of those people.
Oh,
I can't
darn.
Do a loon or a barred owl. I mean, I could play you a tape, Mike, but I'm not sure I'm ready to.
I can do Daffy Duck occasionally.
That's a talent too. You have to look at it that way, I guess. So.
I guess it goes something like this: thanks for the sour persimmon, Buster.
Very
pretty
nice.
Good.
Boy,
pretty
I have good. To. It's all over the microphone now too.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm sure.
I'm going to have to let you go. But I appreciate. Just two things before I do let you go. First of all, we should give kudos to the city of Evanston because, from what I understand, this all started because city of Evanston said, hey, we want to put wind power out on the lake opposite.
Exactly.
And then and the General Assembly said, I guess we'll have to take a look at this, huh? And
yeah.
And so that's how this all got rolling, which is very interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
I found that chart that which I actually have a link to this study that was done. It's called A Summary and Comparison of Bird Mortality from Anthropogenic Causes with an Emphasis on Collisions.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably familiar with that study.
I am very much so. And
what's interesting about it is if you look at wind turbine deaths, annual mortality estimate from this study, and again, people have taken issue with some of the research on this. I've had people write to me and say, well, it doesn't take into account blah, 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 blah. And, you know, then my advice to you is do another study. Let's
yep.
see.
Yep.
But wind turbine deaths, they estimate at 28,500, and that's that would be U.S., right?
Right.
Okay. Airplanes, interestingly, are less than that. I would think they were more. They're 25,000. But buildings, they estimate at 550 million, half a billion. Power lines, 130 million, cats, 100 million, and some people think that's really low.
Yeah, as you put it, these are all estimates. There have been some, studies, and those studies are then extrapolated out. But, building collisions, there's an active program here in the Chicago area to monitor, for example, what happens down in the canyons of the city. And there's a lot of data. A lot of that data has been gathered by folks at the Field Museum and a volunteer group called the Chicago Bird Collision Monitors. So there's an increasing depth of information about how big the problem is. And alongside that, there's also a strong movement to try and minimize the problem. So you're talking about building design. You're talking about use of bird-friendly glass so that reflections of trees or those types of things can be minimized or eliminated, so that building mortality, for example, can be reduced dramatically by taking engineering steps, if you will. Same thing with power lines. They're learning how to the power line industry isn't dedicated to killing birds. If they develop a fix, they'll use it. Same thing with the turbine folks. If they can find a way to minimize or eliminate a problem, they will. I think human ingenuity allows us to do some things that at first seem impossible. And in this case, I think we will learn how to better manage, you know, our impact on the environment, so that we're not doing those things. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue of feral cats, there's a pretty simple solution to that. If we could get, just to pick a number, if 3/4 of the people that let their cats out every night didn't, the mortality of birds and small mammals would be reduced substantially. So that's education. I think, Mike, I'm an optimist. I think if you identify a problem and people, you know, get together and discuss how to solve it, you can solve it. Obviously, you can't solve it maybe so that you get 100% safety, but you can certainly minimize the impact of what we do on the creatures around us that we live with.
And that's a great way to end this. Bob Fisher will be at Wild Things Conference. That's on the 2nd of February at UIC in Chicago. Lots of great, like you said, 90 of these things going on. And Bob will be presenting this subject about wind turbines in Lake Michigan. You'll get to see lots of graphics and get to see some of that stuff that we were talking about on the air. I appreciate you being on the show this morning, Bob, and I hope we meet in person soon.
Well, I look forward to it, Mike, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In just a couple of minutes here, we're going to have special guests in the studio. Maybe I'll explain that later on. But is anybody else out there kind of relieved that we might actually hit 0 degrees Fahrenheit on Monday and Tuesday? Can I see some hands? There's one. There's two. Perhaps civilization as we know it isn't over yet. On the other hand, it might be a couple of years before we have measurable snow in Chicago, so strap yourself in. Meanwhile, a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine can help. Even if climate change is making planning difficult, the January-February issue has its 2013 Garden Planner smack in the middle of the magazine, where you can write notes like, "Rained salamanders today, must ask Rick DeMaio what that means." And in this issue, the local experts have picked their favorite vegetable varieties for good eating this growing season. Crops like mortgage lifter tomatoes, Detroit dark red beets, and French breakfast radishes, among many others. Then there's my column on the inside back page, sometimes called Madison Heights Hooey. Got to know where Madison Heights is to know about that. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go ahead. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com right now or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got to hear. Wow! I feel nice.
See, I bet a bunch of people out there thinking, that's a commercial for something, isn't it? You know, you play some music and you expect it to go right into the commercial, but no! Here on the Mike Novak Show, we play the real deal. And if Jennifer Brennan's listening, she's probably adding that to her music collection. She thinks I ought to do a CD of favorite songs. Mike Novak, memorable bump music. Problem is, I don't have the rights to any of that music, so there's not much I can do about it. I mean, I could put it together and give it to you, but...
30 seconds long, each of them.
That's it. You get, and then when you walk into a room, you play your own bump music for people. I kind of like that as a way to go in life.
Just, yeah, you'd get annoying pretty fast, I think.
I think so. Hi! Okay. In the studio, I have David Miller, and he's with Iroquois Valley Farms, LLC. Okay, do we cop to our big miscommunication here, David? What do you think? I'm always in favor of transparency. I think it's a good policy in life, don't you?
Absolutely.
Okay. We were going to schedule this, or we did schedule it, apparently, and I lost track of it. Now, we just didn't communicate very well together, and those things happen sometimes. But he's here.
I can validate. He is a busy man, okay? He's got stuff going on. So he's not just sitting around doing nothing. He's a busy man.
But I'm glad you're here. Because,
yes, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Happy to be here.
It's a concept that I talked about with one of your colleagues. And basically, Iroquois Valley Farms, LLC. I'm going to ask you to explain because it's about investment, but it's investment in organic, right? And how does this work?
In 2007, we started a company that was focused on purchasing farmland. And when we looked at this as an investment, we looked at local and organic farming as the highest and best use of the land. So what we've done since then is really just grow the company with just a focus on farmland with young, organic, mostly organic, but also local farmers.
Yeah. Okay.
As the tenants.
Okay. So, and that's why I want to get into this further. You raise the money. Right. You get people to invest in your company. And then what do you do with the money?
Currently, we have about 75 individual investors, mostly in the Chicago market.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we do with the money is buy more farmland. And we are not looking specifically for farmland. What we are looking for is young, sustainable farmers that are looking to grow their business. Typically, they bring the opportunities to us, which is farmland. We buy it and lease it right back.
Oh, okay. So that enables them to stay on their farms.
Grow their business.
Grow their business with some help from you. And then it's strictly a business deal where you give them, I assume, a decent price or a cost to stay on the farm.
There's a lease with every farm purchase, and mm-hmm. that has to be negotiated ahead of time with every farmer. And we do it on what we think is fair terms, and with a sharing of the ultimate profits from the farm. So there's an economic lease that's put in place. Otherwise, the farm is not purchased, or the farmland is not.
I'm looking at your acquisition history, and you've got your what they call a prospective or perspectives?
No, we actually are working on our 2013 offering memorandum currently, where we will be raising more money this year to buy more farmland.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a fact sheet and, of course, a website. And
this is the fact sheet. Okay.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got a profile of one of your young farmers here.
The last $4 million that we have purchased in farm just for young farmers in Illinois and Indiana. And hopefully this year will be in Ohio.
What do you got against middle-aged farmers?
Well,
just
we started
I happen to be in that category.
We started in the middle, actually. So we started, as we say, in the Midwest with mid-sized family farmers who actually were mostly middle-aged. Mm-hmm. And now we're expanding out of the middle, going younger a little bit. There's just a huge crisis out there.
Oh, right, I know. You know, and I have to say, for the sake of a joke, I glossed over the idea that we are losing our farmers at a rapid rate. You know, the attrition rate as they grow older, and not as many people stepping up to take their place.
Well, the excitement there is that there's a lot of young farmers that are looking to step in and take their place. Now, affordability is an issue and land access, and that's where we come in. But, you know, universities, culinary schools, all kinds of different programs are out there educating young people today in sustainable agriculture. It's very exciting.
As you say here, almost $4 million of farmland purchased or contracted in 2012 for leased to young farmers. Over 500 acres purchased in 2012. Your farmers are under 35. Mostly family farmers, and the model is sustainable agriculture only, and you have to have a business plan for that. Why did you go down the sustainable route? I mean,
That's a good question.
Well, it is, because I would assume that the easy money is not in sustainable agriculture.
I think I have to credit my mother. I purchased my Uncle George's farm in 2005. I connected with some of my cousins that were farming organically, started looking at probably what would be considered the most profitable and most healthy use of the farmland. And that's where the organic focus came in. And we really haven't looked back.
So when you walk into a room of prospective investors and say, you know, this is our model. You get people who step up and say, I agree.
We started very conservatively with 10 investors.
Mm-hmm.
And we really focused on the farmer and the farmland. So we grew this really farm by farm. We did this as a company, not as a fund. And that does distinguish us from a lot of other players out there. We don't have a...
So how do the investors end up making money on this?
The investors make money if the stock goes up and they sell it for a higher price.
But it's not a fund.
No, it's stock.
It is stock.
Private stock.
Yeah, okay, private stock. So it's just like any other stock.
Except we're a private company, and there's a lot of private companies out there that issue stock. So we do this as a company. This is the business of the company, and we buy farmland, and we believe that over the long term, leasing it to young and middle-aged family farmers.
It's okay.
We'll be
just ignore me. I'm not even in the room.
We'll be a very profitable long-term business. So we do this as a business. And we have 6 years now under our belt. So now we're comfortable enough to come out and say we're going to raise more money and we're going to buy more farmland to do the same thing.
What's your ultimate goal?
You know, currently, organic farmland or farmland raised chemical-free, pesticide-free, you know, genetically modified-free is less than 1% in the state of Illinois and probably in the Midwest as well. Our goal is probably to get to 2% or, you know, just continue to move that forward. And when it comes down to the bottom line, I think health is the biggest impact out there. So we believe that is a very powerful impact to have.
And I guess my question is, how do you make money on this?
Well, you're buying stock just like in any other company. It could go up, it could go down. Mm-hmm. We don't agree to sell the farmland for you to be paid back. So the lease revenues from the farmers, if the farmers are successful, the lease revenues will grow year by year by year by year. We're improving the soil and the productivity year by year by year.
So you that expect those operations profit to become more profitable with each year.
That's correct. So the company will, you know, theoretically be showing more and more income as it grows. And that translates into a higher stock price.
Okay.
It doesn't translate into selling the farms because that collapses the whole business model.
Right.
So
you have to keep those in the company.
Well, yeah. I mean, IBM doesn't sell their factories when they need to pay back an investor, and we have no intention of selling.
Some people do, though. You know, that's part of the whole business model is you know, companies come and they go. This is being sold off and this one's being acquired. But in your case, you just want to continue to acquire.
We want to continue to grow, right?
But I imagine if you had a an area that's not profitable, instead of selling the land, would you just change the farmer? How does, you know, you've probably not encountered that yet. I guess I'm just...
No, actually we haven't. Most of our farmers have thriving businesses in the mm-hmm. local and organic market, and they're making more money than their counterparts in the conventional side.
Really?
So what we're seeing is that there should be a continued growth toward the local and organic, and especially in years where there's a drought or there's stress conditions out there, the way that our farmers farm outperforms. So that's just leading more business their way. And the whole local movement, of course, as well.
Uh-huh. Did you hear, I don't know if you heard the first hour of my show where I was talking about the story where the study was done in Iowa.
Iowa State.
Yeah, Iowa State. With rotating crops, and the right. 4-year rotation was the most profitable.
We're very aware of that. I was in Iowa last week. We were sponsoring a conference at in Ames, Iowa, called Practical Farmers of Iowa. And Iowa State made a presentation there about that study, which is a long-term study.
Yeah, we're going on 9 years now, apparently.
Right. And then there's also other studies by the Rodale Institute out of Pennsylvania that support the same premise that over the long term, organic farming, organic crops will yield the same as their chemical counterparts on the conventional side.
So why can't we seem to make a dent in, I mean, you know what's going to happen. And that's David Miller with Iroquois Valley Farms LLC. You know what's going to happen? Well, first of all, we haven't passed a farm bill yet. For the first time in our history, we didn't get it done. Thank you, John Boehner and the House of Representatives. We didn't get it done, but you know what's going to happen. Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, well, that was all right. I think it's a sales call. sorry about that. But you know it's going to come up, and it's going to be the same old, same old. You know, which is the subsidies for corn and soybeans and the continued chemical applications and that whole deal. And there will be a token nod to organics. And it's because the money is there in the hands of the people who have done this forever, and it's hard to get it out of their hands. Is your system a way to do that? If people see that this is profitable, do you see other companies doing the same kind of thing you're doing?
We do. I've always been amazed that there hasn't been more. So, you know, over the long term, if you prove the profitability, then the capital is going to come in. Mm-hmm. And we have a 6-year track record, so we're pretty far along in proving that already. Our investors have doubled their money in 6 years. That's not a bad thing to have. Plus, we have all the environmental and
doubled their money in 6 years.
Yeah, and their original investments.
Yeah, but the other thing is you're not taking tiny investments. It's not small investments. You have to have the sizable impact.
As a private company, we're limited to what the SEC says is accredited investors. So that is a special class, a higher net worth class of investors. We hope that law changes so we can take smaller investors. We're geared.
I mean, because I'd love to invest in this, all right? I don't have any money. But, you know, this is something that I'd like to be part of. And I bet there's hundreds, if not thousands, or tens of thousands of people out there who would like to be part of it as well.
We're prepared for that law to change. Our minimum investment last year was 100 shares, which was $12,700. So mm-hmm. for that, you could buy 100 shares of our stock. So you can see that we're not set up just to, you know, take money from, you know, very, very high net worth investors.
Yeah, that's really SEC, pretty reasonable.
The
yeah.
SEC needs to relax that. We're building the secondary market for our shares as we go along because we have a fairly low minimum. And it's a good fit. It's a good fit for us. So
when you say secondary market,
I mean you asked how do you sell your shares and how do you make money? Yeah. So, you know, when you're just getting going, you have to create that market. And we're doing it one investor, one farmer at a time so that the more investors we have, the greater there is a market for our stock.
Well, if folks want to get involved in this, where do they go?
probably the best place to start is the website, which is IroquoisValleyFarms.com.
IroquoisValleyFarms.com. Iroquois, of course, folks, is spelled IROQUOIS. IroquoisValleyFarms.com. And then they can look over the kinds of things you've done and where you're headed.
Absolutely.
It just sounds almost too good to be true.
It's very simple.
It is.
And nothing complicated about this business plan.
It looks like you guys are going to be at the Moses Organic Farming Conference in February
in
Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, that's a big deal. Yes.
Yes, we'll be there. We'll also be in familyfarm.org, the Good Food Festival in March.
That's how I found out about you guys from the Good Food Festival sponsored by Family Farmed.
We sponsor a lot of the local farming conferences. That's where we make the connections with the farmers.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm sorry that the communication was not as good as it could have been. After all, we are a communications business. David Miller, I am so happy that you were here and we got a chance to have you on the show. And I hope people who are interested in this will take advantage. And I want you to keep in touch and let me know how the business is going.
Thank you very much. Our offices are in Wilmette, Illinois, so we are a local company.
That's the other thing. You got to love the local aspect of it. We will definitely talk more. Thank you, David Miller. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We're about to have some colder weather, and it might be a good time to get your trees pruned. One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt, and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Well, because a tree is dormant and is less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to help improve their structure. And once the ground is frozen, it's easier for tree crews to get close to your trees without compacting the soil around them. That's also a good reason to do it now. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Stretch here on the Mike Novak Show. Wow, that worked out okay. That was cool. It wasn't planned, but there we were. And all right, who have we got here in the studio?
Oh, gosh, we're going to do introductions.
Why not?
Sadie Vanderwall, my 13-year-old niece, and her best friend, Caden. And I destroy her last name.
Gapasangra.
I can't even imagine why you would destroy her last name.
Caden and Sadie. Hi, girls.
And they're going to help us with the Go Green or Go Home at the end. In fact, I want everybody, a massive Go Green or Go Home when we get there in about a minute. Well, thank you guys for coming down. Sarah, anything real quick? I know you had a couple of things. You got like 30 seconds, but Master Gardeners are always have events coming up. Anything in particular that you wanted to get?
Looking forward to the Wing Sprints in February. Mm-hmm. We've got a first detector tree pest. Continuing education in Lamont, that's coming up in March, and I'll post links for that.
Cool. And yes, my birthday is tomorrow. It is the most depressing day of the year for many, many
Not
reasons.
Not anymore.
And that's one of them. Okay, so those of you going to send me stuff, send your gifts. I'll just get out my my email address.
Cash or advertisers would be appreciated.
Yeah. It's whatever. payola. All right, folks. At this point, we say go green or
go home.
Ouch, that was loud.